you can try. I've got light of sight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Emergency Out of Order episode number 5 of True Line of Sight. My name's Chandler. Mm-hmm. I'm here with a sleepy Jaden.
Yeah, very sleepy, yes, but I'm here and I'm freaking hyped.
Yeah, we're in the, I'm quite tired as well, and we're just in the wonderful blend between hype and exhaustion that everybody mm-hmm. loves. I would talk about news, but the news is kind of what we're talking about, so
yep.
There we go.
Yep.
So for anybody that has had their head under a rock this whole time, Adepticon is happening, and Games Workshop is there, and they had hyped up a really big announcement going on during Adepticon, which was mm-hmm. cool. They talked about a lot of stuff for various games that they run. The first kind of big announcement, I guess, was the new Lionel Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Model that they showed off, who is gorgeous. Like, just yes. really cool model. I don't care about Dark Angels, but I want him just to be a cool paladin mini, because that's yeah. just a great... He's just a good, big fantasy paladin guy.
Yeah, 100%. It's a problem how pretty that model is. Like, there's a store kind of close to me that's got the Vashtor / Azrael box in, and I'm just kind of like, well, I didn't really want this, but now I really want this.
Yeah, right. Like, just an excuse to, like, yeah. some Dark Angels. Yeah, really cool stuff there. And, yeah, showcased a bunch of stuff for other games. Age of Sigmar, did, you know, Kill Team, all that kind of stuff. But
big Terminators.
Yeah, well, so yeah, that was part of the big announcement mm-hmm. was for new 10th edition. This isn't really a surprise.
No, it's not.
It's been kind of rumored / semi-leaked for a while that this was going to be happening. But getting an actual official announcement, as well as kind of quelling some of the weirder rumors going around, mm-hmm. was pretty great. One of the things that was cool about it, so going into it, they kicked it off with a big cinematic that probably cost a lot of money. it was pretty cool.
Probably about this. That was an expensive piece of advertising.
It was pretty
there.
Cool if kind of like generic but well done. It's just a lot of like Space Marines shooting stuff, so, which like is so cool.
I just have to like, sure, the animations were kind of like Space Marine shooting stuff, but the freaking voiceover, man.
The voiceover was very cool.
Yeah. Taking Gilliman as being like,
as kind of a VO dork, I wish they hadn't leaned quite so much on like vocal effects, but
sure. I'm just talking about the script.
Oh, the actual like, script. Yeah, you know, the actual script's super cool. Gilliman's actually a very interesting character now, which is super cool.
And weird.
They put him in such a funky situation. He's actually yep. quite cool. Yeah, he's very cool. The voiceover was very good. The representation of the, I don't know exactly what it was, but the Tyranid Psyker was mm-hmm. extremely cool, just very intimidating.
Yes.
Watching a Terminator get ripped in half was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, it's a cool cinematic. If you just want to yes. watch some just cool 40K stuff happening, it's very cool. Just a bunch of space Ultramarines fighting Tyranids. Enjoy.
Yeah. Fun fact that I discovered today, that big old wall that Gilliman is like kneeling in front of is actually the door to the Emperor's throne room.
Yeah, I did not know that. Door. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he's right outside the throne room. We've now, and it's a thing of note that so the lion is carrying another artifact of the Emperor.
The shield.
With his shield. Yeah, so we're seeing more kind of Primarchs showing up with bits of the Emperor's stuff.
And, oh, no, it's going to be like Voltron. They all come together with the Emperor.
They all come together and
everything, and it's like...
They all have to form together to be the Emperor, but then they split apart and have to like be a bunch of Primarchs again. Yeah, it's perfect. I don't really see how this could go wrong. Yeah. Anyway, so the big thing though is that they announced 10th edition, and I was definitely, I expected a 10th edition announcement, not like for 100%, but I kind of figured it was about time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, is what I was expecting was like a fun cinematic trailer probably, and like a more info coming soon.
And that is not at all what we got.
Yeah, that's kind of what I expect out of GW usually. But they were like, hey, yeah, we're going to spend like 45 minutes talking about rules and like other release stuff.
Yep.
Like quite a bit of time talking about it, and even showed off a couple of things that are in the rule set, most particularly a data sheet, which was a big deal because you can get a lot of
it. I know. It's a data card.
Yeah, whatever. So, yeah. So, We're going to kind of go through it. It's more or less chronologically as it would be in the actual announcement video. So you can actually go watch that. It's up on Twitch, on just the Warhammer Twitch channel. I expect they'll get it up on YouTube, but I don't know if it is yet or if they're going to.
Yeah, I can't imagine they won't.
Yeah, like, I feel like they should.
Would be wild if they didn't.
So watching that's cool. It's pretty well put together, but it's a marketing thing. So there's a lot of like, this will be awesome. And I think we're just going to talk about it and be like, all right, here's what's really, really great about it. Cause for the most part, we're quite positive on it.
Yes.
But yeah. Okay. So some of the first things they kind of talked about, this is something that I always immediately get kind of wary about is when they start talking about the move towards simplifying the game. Right. And, the thing that they kind of keep harping on this one is like, we're simplifying, but keeping it complex,
but not simple. Yeah,
trying to have more depth. Now, again, this is a big marketing video, right? So take what you will from that. But overall, I think from kind of the direction that they're going in, at least from what they explained, it seems like this is probably fairly true. It's more that a lot of the complexity is moving to different places and places that are a little more upfront, right? And we'll talk a little bit about kind of what I mean by that, but they're definitely like, there's a lot of things kind of being streamlined down. There's a lot of things that I will say are less streamlining and more just moving things into places that make more sense.
Yeah.
Just generally speaking, so it's more intuitive and stuff like that. So
going into this was definitely like one of my huge concerns about like their whole like simplify stuff thing that we knew kind of was going to have to be coming, because there's a pretty big group of people that are like,
yeah, there's a big push for that, right? Whereas you and I are like fiddly nerds, right? Like,
yeah. And so I was just like, please don't make this too simple. Like,
yeah,
there's got to be something here for us. And I think, well, we'll talk about this more, but I think they're walking that line and they're gonna probably nail it. So that's pretty hype.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay. So first off, so this is one of the things that I'm actually amazed I came out of this so positive, because this was one of the things I was going to be most concerned about, is that they are doing an index launch. Now you and I both started playing during 9th edition.
Yep.
But I did kind of have a thumb on the pulse of the game to a certain degree, back in 8th, kind of late 8th. I wasn't playing at the time, but I was kind of generally aware of it. And I also just talking to friends and stuff and getting kind of a better sense of how that was. The transition from 7th to 8th edition was an index launch. What that basically means is that all of the codexes became instantly non-viable. you do not use those for rules. They're basically just lore and art books all of a sudden. Right. Or if you feel like playing 9th edition still, I guess. So yeah, they aren't usable going into the new edition. Instead, everybody is going to be getting an index. This is essentially just a very short, they're kind of placeholder rules. The idea being that what I assume, they didn't exactly say this, but yeah, I think it's fairly obvious, is basically you have these indexes that are basically your placeholder rules, and then eventually you'll get whatever your codex is. Right. And they kind of cycle through that same way that they did through, you know, 8th and then into 9th edition. I was very concerned that they were going to begin doing this because well, obviously, it's a big shakeup for one, and I like 9th edition. But the other thing is that, like, so I feel like 9th edition's in a very, very good place. It has some issues, for sure.
Right.
But I was kind of where I was hoping that the edition changeover would be pretty kind of a consolidation more than a rework.
Like a smooth, just sort of like move in and less of a...
Yeah, whereas indexes kind of imply a pretty extensive rework, but when you get more into what they're doing, it kind of makes more sense. The codexes just wouldn't make any sense.
No, like the 9th edition absolutely codexes. They would not.
But it's also not, I think you're going to maintain a lot of the feel of 9th edition from what we've heard, but the codexes just won't make sense in the new edition with the way that they're changing things.
Yep.
So a couple of big things that are just really nice is that these indexes are going to be free on launch. The core rules are going to be free on launch, which is really awesome. So everybody's just going to be able to get access to them. There is going to be some physical products available if you want. They have like card sets that'll have like all of your different sheets for all your units and stuff like that on them that you can order. What I'm probably going to end up doing is just photocopying stuff.
Yeah.
It's not really that hard to do for a little while, put in a folder or binder or something. And yeah, the other thing that's actually kind of cool is that Forge World stuff is all going to be in the launch indexes.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that.
Yeah, we're not going to have to wait around for Forge World. Now, my immediate kind of like tentative thought is that they're usually a little bit nervous, and in most cases, not all cases, but they're usually a little bit nervous about making anything in Forge World 2 staple, at least the expensive stuff in Forge World 2 staple.
Mm-hmm.
Or the more expensive stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say...
but so I'm kind of what I'm expecting is all the Forge World stuff to be like a little overcosted, like just kind of pushed up a little bit just for safety. But sure. At least it'll be in there. And I don't know, there might be some cool stuff in there. So we'll see.
Look, I'm not saying that I'm having a hard time not ordering a Lancer for my knights, but I'm having a hard time not ordering a Lancer for my knights.
If they make a Porphyrian good, my life is over.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. I love that model.
Yep.
Yeah. Which we'll talk a little bit about some things that may impact models like the Porphyrion soon. So the indexes are free. That's great. One thing I had heard about that is kind of note is apparently when 8th edition came out, it was kind of similar. You got access to a lot of stuff free, but something they didn't have was like mission rules. So you couldn't like play the game properly for a little while. So hopefully they learned from that. And
I can't imagine that they're not like launching with a brand new grand tournament pack at the same time, right? Yeah, like that's got to be a thing.
Yeah.
We're going from Arcs of Omen to like grand tournament fourth Tyrannic War or something. That's a really stupid name for that. We should not do that. But you know, that kind of thing, they're definitely going to have something like that.
Yeah. Grand Tournament, Fourth Tyrannic War, had Ultramarines Revenge 2, the pre-sequel. So going into actually what they're doing. First off, one of the big kind of things here is that they're going to be reducing like faction and sub-faction rules down quite a bit. One of the things I found with any miniatures game, we've played a number of games that have transitioned from one edition to another one, is you can kind of sometimes get a sense, almost a preview of kind of what the next edition is going to look like by looking at like the last handful of releases. Because usually near the end of an edition, even when a new edition hasn't been announced yet, releases are being kind of designed with the new edition in mind to a certain degree to make the transition a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So when I look at this, the first thing I thought about was Cogs of Vashtor, right? They're talking a lot about taking the kind of the subfaction rules and condensing them down to a very singular page spread, having just 6 stratagems, some relics, some warlord traits, some subfaction rules, and stuff like that. And the way that they want that to work is, so say you're playing Ultramarines, right? You'll have your page or whatever. But if you're playing a different sub-faction, you just take that page, swap it out, and you're going to have different stratagems, different warlord traits, different.
Yeah, so like First like Company that. would be get different things compared to just
the regular Ultramarines. Yeah, that's the example they used, yeah. And then the idea, I assume, would be that there's kind of a core overarching set, but they did mention a lot that like the faction rules in general are going to be much, much smaller. Codexes will be much smaller.
Which, to be honest, I'm kind of cool with that. Like, if you think about the actual faction rules for any particular thing, the vast majority of them are like random warlord traits, relics, and stratagems that don't matter that much.
So this is the trick, right? Is that this is great, and because the thing they talked about was like, yeah, we're just reducing it down to a number of impactful choices. Mm-hmm. This is great if they succeeded doing that, right? And the problem is by having less options, it makes it so having bad ones feels a lot worse, right? Like if 2 of your 6 stratagems are bad, that sucks, you know, or relics, right, or warlord traits or whatever. So it makes it more important that they make sure that these things are impactful and good.
Yeah, that line is very important when you have less things.
Yeah. They talked a little bit about that, like, you're going to be seeing less command points available, because they want stratagems to be, like, a big choice you make when you use them.
And to be honest, I think that's fine, because they also said that a lot of things are moving straight into data sheets, right?
Yeah, and so that's the thing. When I talk about, like, when they talk about, like, simplicity versus depth or whatever, they were definitely reducing like the kind of bloated complexity, but a lot of the stuff, a lot of the things that we kind of understand as like current stratagems and things like that are moving into data sheets and being parts of units. And there's an example we'll get into in a little bit, but they're taking a lot of strats and a lot of other ideas and basically trying to put a lot more power and unique rules into the units themselves rather than like the amorphous cloud that is your codex of rules, right?
And to be honest, like, that doesn't sound like it's reducing the complexity level that much, but it really is. Like, consider, like, here's an example. Tanglefoot Grenade, which is something that any infantry model or unit, I believe, can just use in whichever factions have access to them. You know, reduces charge speed. That can be anywhere on the table. But if that's like on a specific unit now, you only have to worry about one thing.
Yeah, it's still a bit of a gotcha, right? But you're like, okay, what does that thing, right?
Right. And so you can like ask, like, which unit has a Tanglefoot Grenade? And your opponent can be like, well, this one and that one. And you can be like, cool, I'm just going to stay slightly out of 12 of them now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes it, and I mean, we've talked about this together a bit, but we're old War Machine players, right? And one of the things that made War Machine an extremely strong rule set, I think in both of our opinion, was that the units all kind of had abilities, right, that made them unique. And so when we heard this, I think we were both like, woo, like this is exactly like this is what we really enjoy in miniatures game. Yep. Is more of that kind of stuff. Now, I am very curious to see other data sheets because I'm curious kind of what this will look like across more units. But I mean, me saying I want more spoilers is redundant.
Yes.
So they started talking a little bit about the phases of the game and whatnot. They talked about morale. Morale is going to be pretty different. And to be honest, we have a pretty vague sense of what they're going with here, but so morale is something that's moving into your command phase, and I laughed when they said that it's battle shock because that's what it's called in Age of Sigmar. But it works like even worse 40k morale currently does. So this is a very different battle shock. The idea with battle shock that they're kind of going with is that, and again, we don't know how it works. All we know is that it's moved into the command phase somehow. So I don't know if it's like based on how many units, like models are left versus the original size of the unit or how many they lost last turn or what, like we have no idea. When a unit fails its battle shock or whatever, its kind of effectiveness on the table is going to be reduced in some way.
Yeah. And I think actually, like, if they've templated this correctly, they could make this be something at launch and then it could morph and change over time as they needed to. Like some units could have like battle shock. You can't do actions anymore. Some units could have like battle shock, you get minus one ballistic skill.
Yeah,
I mean, battle shock, minus one movement, stuff like that.
This might be kind of unnecessary complexity, but like imagine if like battle shock did different things depending on your faction, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it would just work differently.
Yeah, I could totally
different,
see
it. Different fact, you know, it's like a Necron doesn't break in the same way that like an orc does, you know, they're very different,
correct?
Yeah, I don't know. We're not really sure what that's going to look like. They just basically said that, like, when a unit is heavily damaged, they become less reliable. They're not as powerful as they would be normally. So you're not losing models to morale. You're just losing effectiveness out of that unit. And they can still, like, go be bodies somewhere or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, that was, like,
there's a lot of Chaos Knight players, like, real concerned about this. And I think it's just going to be fine, honestly.
Well, it's the same way, like, I saw somebody talking about Night Lords as well. And even, like, Demons have a lot of morale-based shenanigans. And it's like, it'll be different, right? They're going to figure out some way to make it work differently.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that kind of applies to those armies. Another big one is Psychic Phase, which is being removed entirely. They're just removing Thousand Suns and Grey Knights from the game. Psykers are gone. That's it.
Gone.
No more Psykers.
No more. As the Emperor intended.
Yeah. They're taking Psychic powers and basically folding them into just rules that model has. Like, think of buffs being in the command phase. They're representing psychic powers, but they're command phase buffs that you do. Think of damage spells being basically ranged attacks. They're done during the shooting phase. They're still going to have aspects of working like a psychic power in that, like, there's a chance they don't work. I assume Perils of the Warp will still be a thing.
Yeah, they mentioned Perils in the video.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, there's reliability, and they do mortal wounds and, like, stuff like that. They'll work, I think, pretty similarly. But they're just kind of moving him into being more of like a weapon.
Yeah.
or a buffing rule that you have or something like that. Again, this is another one, a lot of information we don't have about how that works. There's some factions that are obviously drastically changed by that.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, probably fine. When you kind of explain it and just hear about it, it's more like they're just making it so there's just one less phase and they're just folding everything you do in that phase into other phases, kind of. And it's like, yeah, fair enough, I guess. It's not.
Yeah, and like let's talk about that from a game design perspective, right? Like going through the whole psychic test deny, blah 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 blah, which we don't even know if there will be denies anymore. That whole process is another thing you have to learn as a player. Whereas if on the card it's like during your whatever phase, do this, roll this, and then if this happens, this other thing happens, mm-hmm. right? Like,
and you can make it out. You could make it work differently on a unit by unit basis, like how they roll for it or whatever. If you wanted to, you could have casters that are like, yeah, you roll 1d6, you're bad at spells, you know, like, you know, stuff like that.
Magnus, what would you like to have happen here, sir?
Yeah, they were like, Magnus is probably not going to fail spells very often. I was like, I was happy that they kept specifically talking about Magnus when talking about powerful psychers, because that, to me, it lets me know that they're thinking about the fact that Magnus needs to be powerful, because I'm so done with Magnus being meh. I love that model.
Yep.
And he's sitting right. I can see him right where I am. And he's just been sitting there for months because I never use it. Years, actually, because I never use the guy.
Yep.
Anyhow. So, yeah, psychic phase, it's gone. But, just folding into other parts of the game, which I think will work out fine.
I agree.
Ugh. Anyhow, yeah, we're both sleepy. I have some notes here on stratagems. Another thing of note is that there will also be more core stratagems. We don't know exactly what those will look like, but we know that there's just going to be more of those core ones. So,
speculation is things like Auspex scan is just
a core stratagem. One of the things that's kind of interesting, and this was a thing that was pointed out to me, is that core stratagems, in a sense, kind of take up less complexity space than like codex stratagems, just because if everybody has access to them, everybody kind of knows them.
Yeah, it's right? It's one of those things where, like, if you play against a faction, you know you're not going to be surprised by the things they can do. It's like, well, yeah. I have access to these stratagems too.
Yeah, anything that's a core stratagem, you just know everyone can do. So you're not really going to get gotcha'd by it unless you're just really not paying attention.
Yep.
It'd be interesting to see. Yeah, we'll have whatever some more of the core stratagems are. List building.
Oh, yeah.
Simplified.
Yes.
40K list building is like real funky. It's it's maybe a little easier right now just due to the way Arcs works, where you kind of almost have to go out of your way to make a list that doesn't work. But the new one is just you take a warlord and then up to 3 of whatever data sheets you want, and up to 6 for troops. And
can I like flip out about how impressively perfect this is of a change to, like, the biggest barrier of 40K, in my opinion, is list building. Like, I played 7 games of 40K, some of which I won, before I ever built my own list, because I just couldn't figure out list building. So I just had people build lists for me. And if it's this simple, and then it's like probably somewhere in there you get warlord trait and relic, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously all the like the upgrades and stuff like that you can put in there, but
This is gonna be so nice.
Your overall list construction, it's like, yeah, you don't have all the like. Do you know how many years it's been that I've been looking at the old Bell of Lost Souls article about detachments as my main way of referencing what detachments have what in them? It's stupid. Like, I just Google it every time because I'm like, I don't remember, man. What does a Vanguard detachment has in it? It's just not a thing anymore. I think Arcs of Omen also has kind of shown us that, and there's an aspect of this we'll talk about in a minute, but the old detachments kind of forced you to avoid certain kinds of spam and forced you to take troops, right? And first off, Arcs of Omen showed that people still either take troops or accept not taking troops as a weakness.
Yep.
Right. Of their list design. Because OPSEC is just very strong, but we'll get into that. From a game design perspective, it's such a shitty way to push people to build lists a certain way.
Yeah.
Just going, you must, you have no choice. You must do it this way. Rather than going, hey, like, we want you to take troops, or we want you to not just spam the same things over and over again, or the same mm-hmm. types of things. Let's actually design our game to incentivize you to not want to do that, but you still can right. if you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Arcs of Omen has been a pretty good show that, like, for the most part, even in ninth, they've done a reasonable job of that. There's some lists that'll spam something, but that's always going to be the case.
Yeah, it's not like Harlequins really have a choice.
Like, yes, Iron Hands are going to take a lot of heavy support, like, big surprise. Yeah, so in going into, we'll talk a little bit about kind of how troops and stuff like that have changed. And I think by also moving rules and abilities onto the units, you're incentivizing less spam, right? Because one thing they talk about is that there's a lot of abilities that are basically like only one unit can do them. Mm-hmm. So if you take three of a unit, only one of them is going to be able to use whatever their unique rule is.
Yeah, they're a bit like spells right now in that you can only cast the thing once.
Yeah. And so, like, they're talking about how, like, a Space Marine captain will have, like, some really strong buff he can put out, but only he can put it out. You can't take two captains and put it in two places. So it incentivizes you not to just spam the same thing for the same buff over and over again.
Yeah. They're talking a lot about, like, synergistic list building, like, mixed arms, mm-hmm. both of which are things that I'm like, oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in, like, one thing we know is that most likely, at least, like, the core keyword doesn't exist. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, because we're going to see a lot more units that just buff specific things. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or even on, and again, what we're getting to this in a second, but like the data sheet that we did see has a number of keywords on it that just seem to be like kind of meaningless. Right. Like just stuff that it has. And it's like, hey, maybe more things are just going to be like, hey, this buffs this keyword unit. Right. And they just put right. that keyword on whatever the units they want to be able to buff and things like that, rather than leaning on core, which, and since it's the case with both core and spoilers, OBSEC is gone. Just these like these on off switches, right? That I just don't really like. They give you no nuance. It's just either it mm-hmm. works or it doesn't. And it's kind of arbitrary sometimes where it works or it doesn't.
Yep.
Like, oh, this happens to be classified as a troop, therefore it has OBSEC and is better in this way. And it's like, but it should be an elite, in my opinion. You know, it's all just kind of arbitrary. Yep. And yeah. Yeah, so list building very very simplified in that respect, except that there's hopefully going to be a lot more kind of inter-unit synergy, which is great.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if we're this is speculation, so I'm just warning everybody. So, like, let's talk about, like, real fast, the Vashtor Armory of Renown, that Cogs of Vashtor, that mm-hmm. we think is what sub-factions might look like. If sub-factions have meaningful restrictions like that, you will see people making choices in list building that will bring units that you wouldn't see otherwise.
Yeah.
Like that one, you'll play Demon Engines, and you probably won't play Demon Engines in most other factions at all, right?
Yeah.
So this could be a really interesting sort of unlocking of the potential of list building in 40K, which I think is really cool because it's already one of the more engaging aspects of the game, and this makes it simpler, which is good, and then also perhaps more engaging down the line.
I would say it's like, even if simpler isn't exactly the right word, it's probably more intuitive, right? Like there's nothing yeah. intuitive really about current list design. It's all just like a bunch of arbitrary restrictions that you're just like, okay, I got to figure out how to put my
units that's fair.
Based off these. But whereas instead you're having to actually make like meaningful choices about what units are in your list and why. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing to talk about really is that they showed off a data sheet specifically of the Termagant.
Yes.
Which is cool. Kind of left. I am excited to see a more powerful unit eventually, because this is about what, on a model by model basis, is like one of the weakest units in the game.
That was probably on purpose.
Yeah. So this is like this is as basic as it gets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this data sheet actually tells us a lot, and it takes us into some other topics that they brought up.
First of all, it's not a data sheet.
They still use the word data sheets.
I'm pretty sure they use data card.
I feel like they didn't.
Okay.
Well, like the data card is just the card. Like they said you could get data cards, which are the cards, but the thing is still, fair. I believe, called a data sheet.
Well, they're set up like cards now, which I love.
Yes, they are. All right. So kind of going over it, it's you learn a lot by both what is there and what isn't there. First off, the mm-hmm. actual stat line, you have a movement. 6 inches on a Termagant. You have Toughness, which one of the big rumors going around for a while was that Toughness was going away entirely, and you're going to a slightly more Age of Sigmar-esque, just like if you hit, you wound kind of thing. I'm glad to see Toughness here, because overall, I think it's a good thing. Termagants remain Toughness 3, but we'll talk about that in a second. You still got to save, big surprise. A wound value, they have a leadership of 8+.
Yeah, and... actually, we'll talk about, let's just talk about that real fast. This is speculation again. A lot of people think that we're going back to a 2d6 versus your leadership, and you save on whatever your leadership is. So if you roll 8 or higher, the Termagants are fine. If you roll 7 or lower, then they're not. I think that's probably, that templating suggests that to me very strongly, and it would make sense that something like a Termagant would have garbage leadership, because 8 plus is only 44%. So I'd be curious to see, like, what does a Space Marine Captain, what does a Chaos Knight, what does a, you know, like a Land Raider look like?
Yeah. What is, actually, I'm just curious real quick.
What is Termagant's current right leadership? Now? Yeah.
It's 5 right now.
So pretty bad.
Yeah.
So it's, in the other direction, kind of.
Yeah. Although, so one of the reasons I think a lot of Tyranid leadership values are what they are is because of Synapse, right? They ignore morale.
Yeah.
So they want to make it so when you fail Synapse, it's pretty impactful. Whereas we don't know if that's still going to be how they work.
Right? That's true. It could be very different.
Yeah. So it's possible if you're like, hey, they're not going to be ignoring that, which may probably make their leadership something more functional. Next thing on there is the first kind of new stat, which is OC, original character. Now it's objective count is what they call it. This is great. Yep. I'm excited about this. So this is the first thing where we really talk about the fact that objective secure does not exist anymore.
Yay.
There's things I liked about objective secured, but I'm over it.
Like, there were literally zero things I liked about objective secured. Yeah, when I was first explaining the rules of this game, when we got to objective secured, I was like, I'm sorry, this is a dumb rule.
Yeah.
I maintain that stance.
So how this works is whatever the value of your OC is, that's how many points, basically, your model gives towards controlling an objective that's on. So one of the things they talked about is that, like, most kind of like basic models are going to be 1. Models that we typically understand as having OPSEC today, so basically like troops and things like that, you're going to look at more like 2 on those. So they're just worth more on the objective. Yeah. Rather than just being an on-off switch, right? Having 1 there doesn't... having a single 1 there doesn't get you there, but like they can at least more easily beat out other units. Mm-hmm. The only time I can see this being a little annoying is if you end up with like 1 or 2 models from multiple different units of different values on the same objective and you're all having to like do math. But that's a little particular and it's probably not a huge deal.
Yeah, fine on it.
You're like, this model's worth 3 and these 2 are worth 2 each and these 4 guys are worth 1. You're like sitting there doing math on your hands. But most of the time that won't happen. Most of the time an objective has like 1 or 2 of a unit on it. And
yep.
Or it's just obvious, right? You're like, I have 40 guys on this objective. I think it's mine. But it makes it so much less of a binary thing, right? It's not just on off. I was kind of joking about like, you can have an objective that has like a Hellbrute and a Demon Prince and like a Land Raider on it and like a unit of Terminators. And there's like 1 Militarum infantry guy standing on it being like, this is my objective. And it's like,
this the feels Emperor a protects. Little bit silly.
Yeah, like this feels a little silly that he's like, no, I'm holding this down. You're like, no. It's I think going to be a lot easier to work with. It's still going to give value to troop type units. In that they're going to be counting as extra models. And then ideally you also give them rules that make them interesting. On top of that, which is one of the big problems that troops have, is a lot of troops just relied on being the guys with OBSEC and then being terrible otherwise. So
cultists.
Well, see, cultists are good because they're cheap. The issue is like legionaries. It's like, expensive, like trying to be good at something troops, but that aren't good at anything. Like that's really where the problem is. Like Space Marines know this. Is just having your troops have to be full costed Space Marines that are just like a guy with a bolter is just not very good.
Hey now, bolters are like the staple of offense now.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get into that in a second. As well. So the next thing is that the things that you'll note are not here. There is no weapon skill or ballistic skill on the model's base stat line.
Yay.
The model does not have a strength.
Also yay.
And the model does not have an attacks characteristic.
More confused about this point still, so bear with us on that one.
I don't know. I'm not that confused. I think it works basically exactly how it does now. You just use the weapon. So going into the weapons, most of these stats have been moved on to the weapons themselves, which is cool because you're going to be able to get a lot more granularity on a weapon-by-weapon basis, which is
really
cool. So in the case of a Termagant, they have three separate weapons, right? Termagants have always had access to three separate weapons, which is the Flesh Borer, the Spine Fists, and the Devourer. Those weapons will each have keywords next to them. It's not listed in their attacks anymore, whether they're like assault, pistol, whatever. It's just keywords that are like next to the weapons, like a Flesh Borer is assault. Spine Fists are assault, pistol, and twin-linked. They seem to do a lot of things. So what's cool about that, though, is that means they are assault and a pistol, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So they are both of those things. So assuming, this is just an assumption, but assuming those do the same things, it just means you get both the aspects of assault and pistol, right, that we know.
Which is pretty dope.
Yeah. The attack value is on the weapons themselves. Currently Spine Fists and Devourer are pistol 2 and assault 2, respectively. Now they are just guns that have two attacks, just an attack value of 2.
Yep.
Whereas a Flesh Borer has an attack value of 1. The ballistic skill is on the weapon. I think for like 99.9% of weapons, it's going to be the same stat the whole way down. But this gives them the ability to make that different. So we can think about things like power fists. You know, you say you have a space marine with a 3 up to hit, a power fist might just have a 4 up weapon skill on the model. What's cool about this is it makes it interact properly with things like -1 to hit. Because right now it's always kind of weird that you're like, I'm already bad at hitting with this thing. I can't be made worse, right? Because you already have a -1 that you've given yourself. Real
counterintuitive.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird that you're like, I guess my defensive -1 to hit doesn't help me here because you already have a -1 to hit. Like, that just seems kind of weird.
And it lets you do really interesting things like, well, I don't personally like this because this is one of my favorite things about Sagittarum, but like Sagittarum can shoot, or anything with a combi weapon can shoot both profiles and get -1 to hit, right? Now you could still have that could just be the wording, but instead you could say if you shoot both profiles, your weapon skill becomes whatever, or your ballistic skill becomes something else, right?
There's also a strength value on the weapon itself. Now this is typical for ranged weapons, but this is also the case with melee weapons. Melee weapons are just going to have a strength stat on them.
And that's great because there's no more messing around with like +1 and then double or
it's,
whatever.
And it's always been extremely silly, right? Where you're like a weapon on a guy. Now, the only time it comes up that was of note is things like relic weapons, where if there's a relic weapon that you could give to a Chaos Lord, but you can also give it to a Demon Prince. If the strength stat is a static thing on it, it's going to make it very different value from one model to the other.
Yeah.
There's ways they could write that out though. It would be interesting to see what they go with there. It's a little more complicated, but it's for the sake of less complication elsewhere. You could just have rules text that explains how it works.
Yeah.
On a relic by relic basis. So another thing of note, and this is one of the things where you kind of go in and compare it to the current stat sheets, is that none of these three guns on the Termagant have any AP. Whereas the Flesh Borer is the highest strength of the weapons, but it has less attacks, but is -1 AP.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer has the -1 AP. It still only has one attack, but it's now strength 5. And it's strength 5, which it currently is as well. So the big thing here, this is something that they talk about a little bit that lethality across the board is going down. You're going to be seeing, basically, if an AP value changed, it almost certainly got lower.
Yeah,
and which toughness on a lot of things went up, and strength did not.
Well, and they went crazy with the toughness scales. Like,
yeah, we were like, about
strength 9 would be cool, or toughness 9 would be cool on more.
They're like,
stuff.
Oh yeah, maybe like, tanks, but maybe like 9 being the new 8. And they're like, yeah, there's vehicles with higher than 11. And we're like, oh.
Yep.
Now they did make that sound like 12 is pretty atypical, but they're like, it can go up into the like 10, 11 range. Like on
you know, yeah, it's like, oh, tanky oh dang, so. Strength 6 stuff, wounding on 6s.
Hmm. Yeah. And the idea that they kind of talked about with this is like, so currently, like right now, it feels like plasma is just kind of like the be all end all of what a weapon needs to be, right? Where it's reasonably cheap for what it is. You can armies that can take a lot of plasma will take a lot of plasma and just be like, hey, here's a million like strength 8 damage 2 shots or whatever. And that just kind of makes them good into everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they're pushing for is that by making it so those kind of weapons just are not just an automatic fix. Mm-hmm. You really have to think more about like going out of your way to take anti-tank stuff versus like stuff that's made to fight other things. We can't know whether or not this succeeded, but that is kind of right. The intention that they were going for was to make it so weapons kind of have their roles. And so just having more AP and more strength is not just always the best answer, which in current 9th edition, it kind of is a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Until you run into certain kinds of SKUs, but for the most part, it's just like, I mean, even into a lot of infantry SKUs, some armies just bring so many plasma guns or whatever that it doesn't matter. They'll still get through them all.
Yeah. And I think that's really kind of important because if they're really wanting you to diversify your list building, then they're going to need to diversify the kinds of threat profiles that you need. And the only way to do that is to diversify the defensive profiles that are out there. Because currently there's like 3 relevant run, and that's it.
Yeah. So you're looking at a lot of more typical anti-tank weapons going to wounding on 5s, right?
Yeah. Like if meltas don't change and things go to toughness 9 a lot, that's big.
Yeah, it changes that lethality quite a bit. And that's a good thing, because one, it's a big issue that 9th edition has had is, I mean, we got just AP and strength creep, right? And mm-hmm. to a point that if something can be seen, it can be exploded by many armies. Yep. And so anything that you have that's not, you know, that's out in the open at all is just dead. And there's no, well, which makes it so there's very little choice in how you actually move up the table, because it's like, well, I just have to be behind Harain all the time.
Right. And then the other thing is, we know from Armor of Contempt that just one AP difference is actually quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're curious what that exact math looks like, I wrote an article about like what Chaos Knights are going to do about this. And there's a little blurb in there about the exact math on toughness 9 versus toughness 8 into like the strength 8 weapon category. And it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, even things like going to like T10 into even like strength 5 weapons.
Oh yeah, that's
there's absurd. A reasonable number of like kind of anti-tank strength 5 weapons, like just like strength 5 damage 2, even like heavy
Sagittarum builders. Weapons.
Yeah, they often kind of damage tanks, right? Just by like being kind of higher volume fire and wounding on 5s. Well, mm-hmm. now they're wounding on 6s if your toughness 10, right? And that's a big deal. That's literally half the output.
Yes.
And that's a big deal. And so this on the data sheet, seeing that AP going away, it's a tiny little thing. It's like, oh, that weapon has one less AP, but it's a sign of what they're talking about, that we're just going to be seeing AP going down. You're going to see a lot more AP zero, I think, just in general.
Yeah.
Stuff having to just shoot at your saves.
Which I think is probably fine. You pay for those saves, right?
Yeah. Going to melee weapon.
Because I play Custodes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So Termagants have their melee weapon, the just claws and teeth. It's just got one attack. Weapon skill 4 up, strength 3. Pretty basic. Termagants are not here for their melee weapon. They have an abilities section. Under abilities, you have a faction rule called Synapse, which is, it's a keyword that's just Synapse, and it's listed under a faction section. This tells me that this is a rule. I mean, same as it works now. This is a rule that is in, like, the Tyranid faction rules, right? So we don't know what it does. I don't know if it's similar to the one in 9th or if they've changed it or what. But we just know that they have Synapse.
Yep.
Which, like, one thing I should note, because this is a thing, is that Termagants don't have Synapse.
Yeah.
So Synapse is almost certainly going to work differently. Like, what having Synapse means is going to work differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's on a model that it wasn't on before. But then we have the first sign of what they're talking about with units getting rules, and it's a cool one. Is Skulking Horrors, which so Termagants.
I love
just,
this rule.
It's really good. This is such a trolley rule because you do so much stupid stuff with it. There's like an obvious use for it, and then there's all the bullshit uses for it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes my
Circle Ouroboros player brain just gonna go.
Yeah, exactly. Once per turn, when an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fall back move within 9 inches of this unit, if this unit is not within engagement range of one of our enemy units, it can make a normal move of up to d6 inches. So Termagants are a ranged unit, right? And so the obvious thing that is kind of the basic use here is that they move up to charge you and you back off d6 inches and just make their charge harder. Mm-hmm. There's so much dumb stuff you can do without, the game doesn't really have out of activation moves like this. Normally it's pretty rare.
Yeah. And, like there's the fight phase move for the Bloodletter stratagem.
Yeah. I mean, well, and there's like stratagems a little like this. I think like, Jakari or Harlequins have something about
Harlequins
like
have a thing where if you charge me, I can move before you make the charge.
Yeah. Stuff like that's yeah. I've seen stuff like that. The main things about this one is it's like, no, you can move back away from charges, or you can move forward and stop them from being able to charge you onto an objective. You can move at an angle so that, you know, maybe they weren't even trying to charge you, but now you're in their way. And
this thing doesn't say once
like
per
that.
Turn, does it?
It does say once per turn.
Oh, it does say, okay, that's
important. If it didn't, it'd be wild.
Yeah.
Now, this is a thing where this is a little bit of information that's a little bit uncertain, which is they kind of talked about how, like, units will have things that, like, only one unit can do it. We don't know if that's, like, a core rule thing, and Skulking Horrors is something that can only be activated by one Termagant unit in a turn, or if it's just something that they all get. I genuinely don't know. I feel like it's a little murky in some of the way they worded things, but we'll see. The last thing on this data sheet is down in the keywords section. There's a few things here. One is I talked about how they kind of have a couple of, like, sort of random keywords that are like, I don't know what that means. Now they have this keyword currently, but they have Endless Multitude, which is just on Gargoyles, Hormagaunts, and Termagaunts currently.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like this is just a keyword that its only purpose can be for some kind of rule to interact with.
Reference.
The other one is Great Devourer. I don't know what that is.
Nope.
I've not seen that before. But the big thing is that they have infantry and they have Termagaunts keyword as well. But they have a separate little keyword section that says faction keywords Tyranids. Now
it's so good.
I think for most people, you'll be like, okay, I don't really see why that's a big deal. But boy, if you've ever had to interact with like how armies soup and things like that, what constitutes a faction keyword is a hot mess in 9th. It's mm-hmm. so weird. Because there's a bunch of things that are faction keywords. But most rules that let you like do weird things with faction keywords have to like go out of their way to specifically call out certain faction keywords as not counting as faction keywords mm-hmm. and stuff like that. It's very strange. So they're just going, this is a faction keyword, Tyranids. And you're like, okay, thanks. It's very intuitive. It just is what it is.
Yep.
Yeah, there's not really a lot to talk about on that one. It's just, yeah.
Oh, it's just a great.
There's a very just convoluted thing in the game currently that this fixes. So,
yep.
Neat. I'll take it. Absolutely. Okay, let me see what else we had. We talked about toughness. Honestly, for 10th edition itself, that's most of what they had talked about.
Yes.
There's a few more odds and ends. They just within the announcement they talked about that if you're into boarding actions, they're going to be keeping 10th ed rules, which is actually pretty cool. I'm not super interested in it myself, but GW is not averse to dropping something like boarding actions, getting people to spend money on it, and being like, anyway, new edition. If you want to keep playing that, play 9th, I guess. So them maintaining that there's like, you know, the boarding actions mission books and stuff are designed to be used with 10th edition rules already. And so you don't have to get new ones and they're going to be compatible and whatnot. The other thing that's kind of cool actually is the combat patrol thing.
Oh, yeah, this was neat.
Yeah, this is a good idea. So combat patrols currently have just been kind of like, it's a start collecting box, essentially. It's just a slightly discounted way to buy a bunch of models. They're usually like monopose, they usually have some downsides, but they're a little cheaper, and they're usually, like, faction dependent, they're all right. But they're making it so it's actually, combat patrol right now is just like a very low point value game of 40K, and it kind of sucks. But how they're going to work now is it's actually its own game mode where you have to use very specifically the models that are in a combat patrol box. Mm-hmm. They say that they're all designed to be balanced against each other. Good luck.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't believe that they succeeded at that for a second, but I also don't think it's that important.
Because it just has to be kind of okay, right?
It just has to be fine, right? To me, when I read this, I understand that there's some people that would be like, ooh, I could play a very low point value game. That doesn't interest me at all. It doesn't interest me for a second. But what this is cool for is new players. Or getting into a new faction. You know, being able to have something that you can just be like, hey, I can play at this kind of low point value. So it's going to have its own rule set that's basically the 10th edition rules, but just like simplified and streamlined a little bit for being a smaller point value game. This is a great idea. Yes. I mean, we've had a lot of interaction with this, that having a smaller point value game that is very, very close to, as close as possible to your base game, but has some shifts. Basically, like, acknowledging that low point value games don't just work in your rule set, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a huge deal.
A lot of miniature game companies really just want to act like, yeah, you can just play at whatever point value. And it's like, yeah, you can. It doesn't work good at a certain point. And so acknowledging it and going, hey, we have a slightly condensed, like, tweaked rule set to allow for this a little bit better. Really good. Really great idea. Yep. And having them in the combat patrol boxes is very just consolidated and easy to work with. And you go, hey, here's the stuff you can take in this army.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, the combat patrol boxes, model count-wise, as far as, like, bringing stuff to game night, are pretty low. So if you and your club just decide, like, hey, we're all just going to have the combat patrol boxes, and if anybody ever wants to demo, we can just, like, whip out two combat patrols.
Yeah, you can just say, yeah, get a couple of combat patrols painted up for, like, four or five armies or whatever, and just be like, okay, we have a little demo kit, right? Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
And then the last thing they kind of talked about is Crusade. This is their kind of narrative, like, league structure. They're saying that it's Crusade basically as it currently exists, because I guess it's actually fairly popular. I haven't really played around with it, but I guess the 9th edition version of Crusade is, people generally like it. It's getting new rules for 10th edition that function generally the same. The story is going to be centering around the new war with the Tyranids on the Western Front of the galaxy, which is pretty cool. And that pretty much wraps up all the stuff they talked about on the Adepticon thing, at least as far as I know.
There are a couple of other things that were said that, like, weren't in the key, like, in this thing exactly. Like, for example, that this is all coming sometime this summer.
The new website basically says it's dropping in summer.
Yeah, my personal speculation is this is coming in June, because they pushed back all of the open series to July and later, which makes me think that the Tacoma Open, which we're both going to be at, is going to be one of, if not the first, like, huge event that has 10th edition rules, which would be hype as heck.
Yes. Yeah. That'd be super cool. Yeah. That'd be very cool to see. A couple other random little things is, so you had mentioned they showed off some new Terminator models, which I do appreciate that they're going with a very classic Terminator look. It's just spruced up a bit. Termagant's getting new skulls, which is actually kind of hype.
They're actually really nice looking little kits.
Yeah, like, they look
holy
great.
Smokes, they look great.
They look great, and there was, and I don't exactly know where this was said, but they did talk somewhere. They talked about that Tyranids. It sounds like Tyranids are getting a pretty revamped model line.
Yeah, the exact quote, because I wrote this down for one of the Discords I'm in, was this is like the biggest plastic refresh that they've ever done.
Yeah,
so that's
which is good because Tyranids have a lot of bad sculpts.
It's really bad for me because I'll
yeah, it's the same as, like, I live in a world where, like, if Eldar got, like, a really model refresh, it's, like, kind of over, right? Because they're like, oh no, they'd actually be cool. That's the life we live. It sounds like they're gonna be getting that. There's so many rough old, I mean, there's some stuff that's still metal that's, like, in circulation today. Seeing, like, a new Lictor Death Leaper would be very, very cool. Yep. The world needs a cooler Swarmlord model. The thing is, Swarmlord's model isn't even really bad. Like, it's fine. It's just,
it's not as cool as it should be.
It's not as cool as the Swarmlord should be, right? Because he's the boy, you know?
You know what would be sick as all heck? Mm-hmm. Make him bigger and make it a dual kit with a plastic Dimacron.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, like a non-Forge World Dimacron. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome. I would love to. I said this before, like when we knew the Tyranid Codex was coming out, one of the things I'd said is I was like, God, I want part of their new models to be just a freaking huge, gnarly Swarmlord, right? Because one of the things that's really cool about Tyranid is actually that you can do, a little off topic, but something like the Swarmlord even, is you can make him look pretty different than he does in lore, because what does a Tyranid look like, you know, from one year to the next? Like, if he decided he needed to be bigger, he could get bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, like he has that. He's a Tyranid. He can do that if he wants. So I would love to just see a Demon Primarch sized, just awesome Swarmlord would be so cool.
That'd be dope.
Big model refresh line for Tyranids, which is great because they need it. Hopefully they do that while backing off on releases for a little bit and catch up on all the crap they have on backorder, because it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's so much
stuff. I think the overall takeaway that we've got here, though, is that basically every single thing... Oh, there's one other thing also. They're making an app that's supposed to not suck.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I'll believe it when I see it, I guess.
This is a free army builder app. It being free is nice. The current app is dumpster fire garbage, so...
Yeah. Now, that said, they have the money. They could shock the world.
Yeah.
I could see it happening. But overall, like, we are hyped out of our minds, because basically everything they've said was pretty close to the best possible version of whatever the change was going to be. And none of the things that they've said are, like, really concerning in terms of basically anything that I can think of.
Yeah.
So they've managed to make me, like, I went into this being, like, real trepidatious. I've had a bunch of games kind of explode under me in the last couple of years, and this was like, all right, am I gonna just be like sad again? And it was like, nope, actually we are hyped out of our minds. It's great.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm excited to see just what they do with it. Like, it's mm-hmm. a lot of things that are thing. I mean, Jade and we've been talking about miniature games together for a very, very long time, and I think we both, hearing a lot of the announcements, were like, knew each other would be very on board with a lot of stuff, because it's they even directly addressed issues I've had with the game and have talked about publicly before, and it was like, hey, we're just fixing that, and it's like, oh, okay.
Right,
okay, cool.
You're just gonna fix it, huh? Okay, cool. All right,
you're just making the game way better, huh? In my opinion, yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure when Jaden gets to read my notes, I've always got all these little things in parentheses.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Stat line, right, movement, there. Toughness, thank God. Save. Like, I make sure everybody knows how I'm feeling about things.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Pretty much.
That about wraps it up for right now, though. We're going to go to bed, probably. Probably. Yeah, there's going to be more stuff coming along. I'm sure we'll have articles and stuff up about it, as well as talking about it on the cast. Another thing they sort of mentioned was that there would be more and more updates on Warhammer Community over the coming weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if the first week or two was kind of rehashing the stuff we already know, but maybe with a little bit of clarification. But hopefully we'll start seeing some new stuff pretty quickly. I want to see a few different levels of data sheets.
Yeah. Give me a Space Marine, a Space Marine Captain, a Knight...
Like a Primarch or some big complicated thing. I want to see what a very complicated data sheet looks like.
Show us the lion, dang it.
Yeah, show us the lion. The lion, he's probably never designed with a 9th edition data sheet, so we'll see.
Yeah,
what he looks like being constructed in 10th from the ground up. And I'm excited for, we were kind of talking about doing a stream when the indexes come out, of just like sitting down and reading them.
Yep.
You know, hot taking them, because everybody loves hot takes.
Yeah, they do.
So with all of that, I want to give a big thanks to all you nerds who support us on Patreon. If you want to check that out, go to Lifesite Wargaming, patreon.com/Lifesite Wargaming, even.
There it is.
And you can support us on there. A lot of fun little perks on there you can read through. So stuff you get, including a fun colored name on our Discord, which you can find a link to in our show notes. Go to our website, lineofsightwargaming.com. Got a lot of articles and stuff up on there. You can go to our Facebook, which is just Line of Sight. And yeah, that's all I'm talking about.
Sounds
good. We'll see everybody next time for whatever.
Yep.
Probably news about 10th, hopefully.
No, the next podcast is actually Stratagems. We've already recorded it.
Well, okay, yes, technically the one that, yes, I know that, but the next one we actually record, well, it might end up being about demons because we're being requested to do that.
It's true. It's true.
I guess we'll see. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Come to play. Stay to slay. Back and forth, come and go. I'll tell you what you want to know. How to set your trap. Watch as I attack. Try to play the game, try to stay sane, working that brain, hope it's not in vain. You can try to play it safely, but there's no way you can break me. Time to get ready, the foe is coming steady, and we'll give it all we've got. Keeping it light, but holding on tight. It doesn't matter if we win or not. Gotta give it your all, even if you fall. We came to fight a fair fight, but now there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can try, but I've got line of sight. You come and talk and smack, well we ain't like that. Talk is cheap, hard work and skill is where it's at. Now when your men wilt, you best try not to tilt. And if you beat me, there's no need to feel guilty. I don't play to say. Get ready, the foe is coming steady, and we'll give it all we've got. Keeping it light, but holding on tight. It doesn't matter if we win or not. Gotta give it your all, even if you fall. We came to fight a fair fight, but now there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can try. I've got line of sight. Did you think you could get away this time? How cute. Well, I've got line of sight. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can't try. I've got line of sight.